Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Anything said on Hillbilly Broadcast should be taken only as opinion. Also, the views and opinions expressed by guests of the program that we interview do not necessarily reflect the views of the hosts of Hillbilly Broadcast or its advertisers.
Please remain calm. There is no need for alarm. This space is now being taken over by Hillbilly Broadcast.
So I'm once again driving home from work, and I figured, what better of a time than to record a couple intros for some podcasts that I've been needing to record. So if you hear the background noise, you know what's going on. My conversation today is with a lady named Erica Kalinich. Now, Erica is the Libertarian candidate for the governor of the great state of West Virginia. Full transparency, I've never voted third party, never voted for a Libertarian candidate, but after talking with Erica, I am very seriously thinking about it. I like what she had to say. I like a lot of her ideas, a lot of her strategies, things like that. She seemed like a very nice lady. She's a lawyer lives here in West Virginia. And I think that she presents some ideas that could very well gain traction in West Virginia. It's very hard for a third party to gain any kind of national traction. You don't normally see that happen. Well, as far as running for president, you don't see that happen. But you have seen third parties gain quite a bit of traction on the state level. So I think it's very attainable. I was very excited when her group reached out to us and wanted to talk to the podcast. So without further delay, here is the Libertarian candidate for governor of the great state of West Virginia, Erica Kalinich.
I thank you for taking time to talk to us.
Yeah, thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Give me a little bit of your background. Where are you from? A little bit, where you grew up, all that kind of stuff.
Sure. Well, I'm from West Virginia. I was born in Ohio, but I only lived there for about 18 months, and I've spent most of my time growing up back and forth between Buchanan and Wheeling. My parents were divorced. So when I was with my dad, some of the time, depending on which parent I was with, I was either on Wheeling Island or in Buchanan. So I've been raised here in West Virginia. I went to a West Virginia Wesleyan for college, and then I took off. I was one of those kids who thought, I want to leave West Virginia and do bigger and better things. Think West Virginia had much for me. Like a lot of kids do, they think if you want to be successful and have opportunity, you got to go somewhere else. So I left and went to law school at the University of Akron in Ohio and started my law career actually in the Northern Panhandle, in Wheeling and met my husband, Carl, who lived in Cleveland, Ohio, and he convinced me to move back up where I had gone to law school for a little while there in Cleveland. And I decided that the city life was not for me and felt, you know, the hills of West Virginia calling, and convinced Carl to move back to West Virginia with me. And we moved back to Buckhannon, where we've raised our daughter Iris, and I've built my law firm. It's a business that I started myself, and I've built it up from the ground and now have about 40 employees and three, soon to be four, different locations throughout the state of West Virginia.
Very good. I like you already. That's one of those things. The city life never appealed to me, and there's something about West Virginia that just, I tell my wife different times, she's lived a little bit all over the world, and like, man, you might make the case that there's some places more beautiful, but it's hard to find a place that's more beautiful than West Virginia.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I agree. You know, funny thing is, when my husband agreed to move here with me, he said, you know, five years, Erica, I'll move to West Virginia with you for 5 years. And then, you know, we're coming back to Cleveland or we're going somewhere else. And that was in 2010. And now, you know, you ask him where he's from, he says West Virginia, and he doesn't want to go anywhere else either.
Good.
To be fair, Phil hasn't actually left the state of West Virginia. So he's got a very limited perspective on beautiful places around the country and world.
Erica, just so you know, Ben's sitting in Texas right now, so he's a little different.
I've been across the Mississippi a couple of times. Right?
I've been out of Barber County a few times. So, Erica, what made you decide to go into politics? I know a lot of us, we sit around, we talk politics, you know, with BS people work and all that, but very few people decide to actually go into it. So what made you decide to dip your toes into that water?
Oh, you know, frustration and sadness, And I just thought, I can't sit by anymore and let it happen. Because of my career, you know, as I mentioned, I'm a lawyer. I got around to the state capitol a lot, and I was down there and saw how the sausage was made, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
And honestly, it make you sick that the people of West Virginia just get lost. These politicians get elected and they go down there and they forget who they represent. They forget about us. They forget about me. They forget about you. They forget about, you know, all these folks. And I just thought, how sad is it? You know, how sad is it that folks that are sitting in their homes in West Virginia are under the illusion, I think, or the ones that aren't are as frustrated as I am, that we're electing folks that are going down to Charleston and representing our interests, and they're not. You know, there are special interests involved. DC is controlling a lot of what happens in West Virginia. And I just thought, we need a normal West Virginia person who understands West Virginia values, who isn't affected by, you know, money that comes in from Washington, D.C., money that comes in from special interest organizations, just somebody who understands that whether or not you're right, whether or not you're left, that we're all West Virginia.
Sure.
And that we need somebody down in Charleston to represent West Virginia people. And I realized that so often when I knew it was happening for me, when I was going to, you know, the ballot box, so to speak, on election day, I wasn't really voting for anybody. So often I found myself voting out of fear. And when I talked to other people, that's what was happening as well. You were going and you were saying, well, I'm not really voting for this person. I'm really voting against the other guy. I'm so scared that the other guy is going to win. You know, I might as well throw my vote to this person. And I thought it would just be great if you could go and say, I really believe in this person. I really believe that they're a true West Virginia who just wants what's best for people and could just really give West Virginia some hope and some integrity and just represent all West Virginia people. And I thought, well, I'm not going to sit at home anymore and complain. I'm just going to step up and try to take part in process. And here I am.
Sure. Yeah, very good.
You have to admire the person that's willing to step in the arena. We all talk, we all criticize. Shoot, half the people that talk never even actually show up and vote. But
that's true.
I mean, how do you actually affect meaningful change with the amount of money that's in politics? You know, it's the same story. I lived in Ohio up until 3.5 years ago. It's the same story in Columbus. I'm in Texas now. It's the same story in Austin on steroids. It's the same story a millionfold in D.C. But how do we actually make meaningful change with the amount of money that the lobbyists bring and how much control they have on things and how much control people who are unelected bureaucrats who stay in power regardless of who's actually filling the seat?
Yeah, well, you know, I think, first of all, it just happens one person at a time. And I know that that sounds silly, but it really does. I ran in 2020. This isn't my first, you know, my first rodeo, so to speak. I ran in 2020. And what I can tell you is that the reception that I'm getting from the voters out there this year, as opposed to 2020, is completely different, which tells me that if I continue to go out there and talk to voters and continue to try to spread the message that it works. So, you know, I just try to spread awareness one voter at a time. And, you know, my opponent's Patrick Morrissey, right? He raises millions and millions of dollars. Am I ever going to be able to do that? Probably not. But what I can do is I can work harder than he does. I can go out there, you know, every single day. I can go out to every fair and festival I can get to. I can spend 14 hours beating the street, handing out hundreds of cards, you know, sweating profusely, you know, putting holes in my tennis shoes and my sneakers, talking to every single voter that I can and explaining to them what actually happens in Charleston. And then, you know, goodness, if I get to Charleston and I'm only one elected official that gets there, well, then I just hold everybody accountable that I possibly can. And, you know, I think that that's all that it would really take to start to effectuate change, is you just get one person in Charleston who starts to hold people accountable, who starts to say, well, you can't do this. You can't just, you know, take all the taxpayer money and do what you can and, you know, or do what you want and start your pet programs and, you know, lie to the people and be corrupt. You can't do this. You just get one person who starts to hold people accountable. And you just try to get the voters to listen. So you just have to work harder. You just have to work.
Sure. You know, you mentioned about the influence from D.C.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, I'll be very transparent with you. I've always liked Donald Trump, but something that has always kind of turned me off was the amount of local politicians, how do I say this nicely, that seem to just be butt kissers when it comes to that. And it's like they try to just say, hey, I'm aligned with this guy, so therefore you want to vote for me. And my reaction to that is like, I mean, we've seen guys here running locally in the state where they'll even have Trump's name on their bumper sticker along with their name just to show everybody, hey, this is my guy. When I'm like, okay, that's different. I want to know, what are you going to do for West Virginia? Like, what are your actual beliefs instead of you just trying to say, hey, I'm influenced by this guy in D.C.?
Yeah. You know, that's a great point. So Donald Trump was at the Libertarian National Convention and he said some things I agreed with and he said some things I disagreed with. And that was such a hard thing for my friends on the political spectrum. You know, I have friends on the right, I have friends on the left. And they really wanted me to just say, like, it was a bad speech, it was a good speech, you hate Donald Trump, you like Donald. They really wanted me to just align one way or align another way. And I was like, no, I mean, he said things that were good, he said things that were bad. I was on Metro News with a talk line with Hoppy Kercheval, and he said, well, tell me how you felt. And I said, he has things, he has good points, he has bad points. There are things I align with, there are things I don't align with. So I'm very, you know, I'm very positional based. So I agree with you that there are certainly politicians. I mean, we had someone in our local sheriff's race here in Upshur County who wanted to get elected simply by saying he was the Donald Trump candidate for sheriff. And I was thinking, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Like, what does Donald Trump do as sheriff of Upshur County? Like, he claimed he was the Donald Trump endorsed sheriff for Upshur County. Like, sir, what does that mean? What are you going to do as sheriff? But I agree with you. People get so aligned in these silos, they cannot articulate to you, like, what is your plan as a candidate? And it's part of the whole problem with politics, right? It's just the polarization. It's the, you know, tell me what your label is. Tell me, you know, put a label on yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't talk about issues, put a label on yourself.
Exactly right.
And, you know, like the Washington DC thing, I try to tell folks all the time, like, you know, especially, you know, I tell my grandma this all the time, please turn off the national news and pay attention to what is going on your city council race, because what affects your day-to-day life far more is what is happening at your city and your county level. And then next, your state level. What affects your life the least is what's happening at the national level.
Bingo.
And I don't think, you know, most people aren't paying attention at all to what's happening, like, in their local city and municipalities.
You know, I'm guilty of this too, Erica. And I'm glad to hear you say that, because I've told people that as well. And I'm glad to know I'm not the only one that thinks that. You know, you look at the difference between the state of California and the state of New York and West Virginia, and we're all under the same federal system. And the difference is our state and local politics. And I am just as guilty of that as anybody else of not paying as much attention as I should when those are the races that will impact me the most.
Yeah. And, you know, it's hard. It really is hard, I think, with, you know, the media and groupthink. It's easy to just get caught up in, you know, in the national news and what's happening politically. So I get it. You know, I'm probably guilty of it too.
Well, I agree and I disagree on that point, because the local stuff is the most important, but there's a lot that's done at the national level that has massive ramifications. I mean,
sure,
a wide open southern border, you're not there, you know, like our local sheriff, they don't arrest anybody that's illegal. Yeah, I would be better off. I mean, not, I say this with the caveat, but if there's an illegal that's pulled over that's drunk, they will call their employer, they'll call somebody to come get them. If they pull me over and I'm drunk, they're taking me to jail. That's not equal justice under the law. But they don't have the funds to handle everyone here that's illegally. And that's our local budget being affected by what the federal government's doing. Inflation is being driven so much by sending, I don't even know how many hundreds of billions of dollars to Ukraine and Israel. That's having a massive effect. So yeah, we pay way too much attention to what DC's doing, but the local community can't overcome what they do wrong that's hurting us.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And we could talk all day about, you know, my thoughts on spending and federal spending and how it needs cut off and how I think we should end the Federal Reserve and all of those things. I just think in terms of your day-to-day life and, you know, those decisions, so often people are ignoring what's happening on a local level. But there's no question that, you know, what happens in DC trickles down and has an effect on our communities, and you definitely can't ignore it. And there's definitely a mess, you know, in DC that needs cleaned up. There's, you know, I agree with you completely there.
She's for ending the Fed. She'd have my vote if I lived in Virginia. Tying me up.
You're swaying us, Erica.
How about property taxes? What do you think about property taxes?
I don't like those either. I mean, taxation is theft. I don't like it. I think we should end most of those things. You know, if we're going to have any taxation at all, my position is generally that usage-based taxes are the way to go. I mean, one of the first things that I want to do in West Virginia is end the personal income tax. And, you know, I think I don't give the Republican supermajority in West Virginia credit for much at all. I think they're on track to end the personal income tax. I just think they're dipping their toes in the water a little bit too timidly. They could do it a lot quicker, but the problem is they don't want to cut spending. They want to try to find ways to, you know, eliminate taxes while they continue to increase spending, and they haven't figured out yet that you can't do the two things at the same time.
They just want to talk about cutting spending. You know, the left doesn't talk about cutting spending. The right does, but they actually just spend more money every year.
Yep. You got
right.
Republicans just seem to point fingers at Democrats as they also spend more money.
Correct.
So, Eric, I wanted to talk to you about this. So it seems like to me that there is some overlap between somebody that's a Republican or conservative and libertarian. You know, some overlap in beliefs and political positions and stuff like that. So what was it that drew you to the Libertarian Party?
Well, if I'm being completely forthright, you know, I was, which I like to be, by the way, I was an independent for a long time. And, you know, I always tell everybody when I was a kid and I went to register to vote, I didn't know anything about politics at all. And so I went to ask my mom, who was a very salt of the earth lady. You know, my mom was a bartender. And eventually she was an entrepreneur. She, when she retired, was a convenience store owner. So she's always been, you know, of pretty modest means. And when I asked her, you know, how do I go out and register? And she said, well, honey, I don't know, but, you know, I think Republicans are rich people and Democrats are poor people and we don't have much money. So I think you register as a Democrat. And so that's what I did. And, you know, I'm in my 40s. So you can imagine that was, you know, not yesterday. It was a while ago. So I registered as a Democrat. And it didn't take me long to realize, I'm not a Democrat. So I switched to independent, and that's what I was for the majority of my adult life. And my husband has probably been a libertarian since he came out of the womb. So he always knew that he was, always knew he was a libertarian. And some of the things, you know, they were scary to me. I didn't understand them at first. It took me a long time to come around to them. You know, when he was talking to me about, you know, legalizing all drugs, for example, that sounded crazy to me. I thought drugs come with crime. And he had to explain to me, you know, not necessarily. Crime is something different. You know, what you're thinking about is violence, and violence is violence, and that's already a crime. And, you know, and I said, well, don't we need taxes to help pay for taking care of homeless people? And he was like, you know, no, what about churches? Churches take care of homeless people.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, I will give him credit for educating me. And he started taking me to libertarian events. And then, you know, I started to get exposed to people like Ron Paul. And, you know, I started getting exposed to, you know, real nerd stuff like Austrian economics. And I think what really brought me around was I realized what an interesting world it could be if a political philosophy was, if you're not hurting anybody and you're not taking their stuff, and you're just letting them make their own decisions, even if their own decisions are self-destructive, you know, even if you don't agree with them, you might be able to offer them advice. You might be able to lead them the right way, but you just kind of let them do their own thing. And the government's job isn't to force its will on anybody. It's just really to protect your right to be who you want to be and to protect your rights. I think it was that, really that core principle. So there wasn't a particular issue. You know, it wasn't a social issue. It wasn't an economic issue. It was just this live and let live idea that I just found to be so attractive because sure. I really like people. I'm a people person. And just this idea that we can all have our own ideas and not that we have to respect each other's ideas because we don't. I mean, that's kind of the great thing about libertarianism is, you know, I don't even necessarily have to respect your ideas. Mm-hmm. I just have to let you have them, right? So it was that, just this live and let live philosophy, I think is amazing.
I love that. I think I've slowly kind of migrated more that way myself as I get older. Because I was raised very much in a Republican household. And just, you know, me and Ben sitting had conversations about this. And we've talked about it on the podcast before. As the older I get, the more I like that. Hey, you leave me alone, I'm going to leave you alone. That whole concept is very attractive.
Yes, it really is. And, you know, one of my favorite things about running for office is just getting to talk to people about, you know, about being a third party in general and being a libertarian, because you can imagine, you know, when I'm out there on the campaign trail, one of the first things that people say to me is, are you Democrat or Republican? And when I get to say neither, their interest is really piqued because most of the time people think, I mean, obviously you can't see me right now, but I assure you, I look like a completely normal woman and people normally think of third parties as a little bit crazy. Mm-hmm. And so when I say, you know, I'm neither, and they say, oh, what are you, independent? And I say, well, not, yes, but not really. I'm a libertarian. Their interest is really piqued and they say, wow, what is that? Tell me about that. And, you know, when I say, you know, I'm not left, I'm not right, I'm just free. And I think that you should be free too. And I think we should not hurt each other, not take their stuff. And that's my, you know, not take each other's stuff. That's my political philosophy. Like people really love that. And I don't think there's anybody that when you ask them that question, can't agree with it. Like, I don't think that there's one West Virginian that if I say, do you think we should live and let live? Would say no.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's one West Virginian that I say, do you agree with me that we should not hurt people and we should not take their stuff and the government's role should just be to make sure that we don't hurt people and we don't take their stuff?
That's very much a West Virginia way of doing things. Yeah.
Dangerous freedom.
Yes. Most West Virginians conduct their way. You know, that's kind of the, you know, the mountain people type of thing. You know, just kind of, hey, you know, leave me alone. We're going to do what we're going to do. And you do the same.
What'd Ben Franklin say? Those who would give up a little freedom for safety deserve neither?
Sure.
Yeah.
Something pretty close to that.
Yep. Yep. I agree with that very much. So let me ask you this, and I've probably even used this line on people in the past. It's much to my chagrin. You're going to have people, I'm sure, that have mentioned to you, well, you're not Democrat, you're not Republican, you are libertarian, so you know, a third party, and we tend to have this duopoly of the two major parties on a national scale and usually on a state level. What do you say to people that say that a vote for the Libertarian Party is a wasted vote? There's never no, you know, they're never going to gain enough momentum. What would you say to sway people like that?
Well, if we talk about it in terms of my race for governor, here's what I would say, is that if you ask me, am I going to win the 2024 West Virginia governor's race? I would say to you that I'm running to win. Here's what I'll say to you about the wasted vote argument, is that statistically speaking, Patrick Morrissey presumes that he has won this race.
Mm-hmm.
He will, if my prediction is correct, not agree to debate, not only myself. I mean, they haven't invited a libertarian to a debate in West Virginia in decades.
Are you serious?
So he, I'm very serious.
Yes. Dang. Wow.
I would venture to say he's probably not going to debate the Democratic candidate, Steve Williams, either, because he's the heir apparent, so to speak. He presumes he has won. So we can agree that Trump will probably take West Virginia by a landslide. Patrick Morrissey's been endorsed by Trump. Most people, a lot of people are going to be straight ticket voters. Here's what I would represent to you is that I believe that I have a very, very, very strong chance of coming in second because the Democratic candidate is not running a real race. He has raised an abysmal amount of money. He's not trying. He doesn't care. He's a sacrificial lamb. And if people that agree with me that Patrick Morrissey statistically is probably more likely than not going to win this race are wasting their vote by voting for Patrick Morrissey. Because if they cast a vote for Patrick Morrissey, it probably doesn't matter. Because everybody agrees. I mean, people talk about him like he's the winner already. They say when Patrick Morrissey takes office. So if they cast a vote for him, then he's, you know, it's wasted because he's probably already going to win. But if they cast a vote for me, then what they can do is they can put a Libertarian candidate second in a statewide race, which will do something. It has the chance to really elevate the notoriety of the Libertarian Party in West Virginia. It has the potential to let people in West Virginia and nationwide know that there is a different choice, which then positions independents, libertarians, people that understand that you don't have to vote straight party to come a lot closer to winning next time around. It helps people understand that it's not always a wasted vote. So I would argue the opposite. I would vote that anybody who's really casting a vote for Patrick Morrissey is wasting their vote because it's already presumed that he's going to win. So he doesn't need your vote. I need your vote for a lot of other reasons. I mean, it's the ballot access race for the Libertarian Party, meaning that anybody who wants to run as a Libertarian in West Virginia for things like, you know, dog catcher, you know, all the way up to state auditor, the Libertarian Party has to have ballot access in order to do that. The only way that they can maintain ballot access is by the gubernatorial election. And not to get in the weeds politically, but that's how stacked, you know, the political laws are in West Virginia, is that we have to run a candidate for governor that gets a certain percentage of the vote every 4 years, just so, you know, someone in your local community can run a House of Delegate race as a Libertarian to express, you know, their political free speech if they want to. So if you don't want to cast a vote for Patrick Morrissey, who is the heir apparent, then, you know, cast a vote for me so that the rest of the Libertarians or, you know, independents in the state who want to run as a Libertarian in the future can do that, because this race depends on that. So the other thing is that voting for somebody you believe in is never a wasted vote. It's really not. It's if you can go home on election night and you can lay your head on the pillow and you can fall asleep thinking, well, that felt good. I clicked a box for somebody that I really feel good about, somebody that I believe in, somebody that I really believe represents West Virginia values, somebody who is a real West Virginian, somebody that I trust, somebody that if, you know, they got elected, I'd feel good about knocking on their door and saying, you know, hey, let me talk to you about this issue that's important to me. And even if they didn't agree with me, they would at least listen to me. That's never wasted.
I love that approach. I think that's very good. And it's easy to lose sight for a lot of people as well that, yeah, it's harder for Libertarians or just third party in general on a national level. But I mean, what was it? Was that Jesse Ventura, Ben, that was out? I think he was governor on a third party ticket, if I'm not mistaken.
Minnesota.
Yeah. Well, my gosh, I think Bernie Sanders gets elected on third party, if I'm not mistaken. So it's not.
I mean, yeah, but he also gets millions of dollars to drop out of the Democratic primary.
Yeah. He's president. Quote third party. But yeah, I think it's much easier and there's it's much more attainable to get this done on a state and local level. And I really like that approach that you're going with there.
Well, in a state like West Virginia is perfect for it because you've got such a strong Republican majority. So, you know, that's what I saw in Ohio. Texas is similar. But Columbus, the GOP is so corrupt. Indiana is another prime example. They're a very red state. But their Indianapolis does not care about the rest of the state. They care about Indianapolis. They don't listen to their constituents. And when you have too much power, when you have unchecked power by either side, you know, Illinois, California, New York is the opposite way. But when you have unchecked power by a political party, it is a disaster for the people, the hardworking little people. But Erica, I do have one question for you. It's apparently a very difficult question. It's a question that our most recent Supreme Court nominee couldn't answer. But you described yourself earlier as a normal-looking woman. I just want to know, what is a woman?
Well, I am a woman. This is funny. I was on an interview earlier today, and someone asked me if I was a woman and if I identified as one as well. And I said, yes, I am a woman, and I identify as one as well. I was born as one. I am on my birth certificate as one. I suppose I don't know what the legal definition of a woman is. I am one. I don't know how to describe one. I know that there was an effort in the West Virginia legislature earlier this year. I don't think that went through. There was an effort in the West Virginia legislature earlier this year, I think, to define what a woman was in West Virginia. And I don't think that it passed.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, my.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're lost as a society. It's done. If we don't know what a man is, what a woman is, and the fact that you can't transition from one to the other, we're done. I'm sorry. It's over.
I can't recall exactly how that ended up. I don't think that it passed. And you know, I'm sure that someone that's listening to this will call and crucify me if I'm wrong about that. But I think that that bill ended up getting killed before it got out of the legislature. But there was an effort to define it. And I don't think that that passed.
I thought we went by the slogan in 2020, trust the science or something, you know? Apparently we dropped that. I don't know.
Yeah, they tried to tell us all that. Yeah, for sure. So, Erica, let's now get to your campaign. And essentially, I want you to make the case. Why should the citizens of West Virginia, why should we vote for you? Why should we? I mean, obviously, you said Steve Williams. He's kind of a placeholder. I don't think most people realize he's running.
Who?
Exactly, Ben. You ain't even heard of him out there in Texas, and you won't hear of him. Why should people vote for you over Patrick Morrissey?
Well, first of all, I am a West Virginian. Patrick Morrissey is not a West Virginian. Patrick Morrissey is somebody who saw an opportunity in West Virginia and took it. I am a West Virginian who understands West Virginia folks and who understands West Virginia issues. I am someone who spends every day getting out of bed and fighting the state. I do employment law and I represent West Virginia workers. I understand their needs. I represent West Virginia mom and dad who are battling addiction. I represent West Virginia families who are being torn apart by the system. And that is what I've dedicated the past 20 years of my career to. So although I understand, you know, sometimes it might be enamoring to listen to, you know, Mr. Morrissey and his rhetoric about how he is, you know, fighting Joe Biden, which I think is, if you listen closely, what he talks about his qualification for being governor is what I do is I represent West Virginia people fighting the state of West Virginia. And I think that that is why I am the most uniquely qualified person to be governor and to protect the people of West Virginia from the West Virginia government. I know what the West Virginia, the West Virginia people need. I know what it's like to live life as a West Virginian. And I really want to help people. I think that this state has so much potential. It makes me, you know, so sad to think that we teach our kids that you have to leave the state for opportunity. And I was there. And whether or not we're intentionally teaching our kids that or not, we're passing down that message. And we don't need to do that. Everything that we need to have a bright future is in West Virginia. We just don't recognize it because we've been taught, you know, since we were kids to not recognize it. And we let people take advantage of us. And we elect politicians that do the same thing. We've had the same plan for economic development in West Virginia for years, which is tax the small businesses and the West Virginia-born businesses that are here, take that money and offer it to, you know, special backroom deals to come to West Virginia that offer us promises of hope, promises of jobs that never seem to deliver. I mean, how often have we heard headlines about a new, bright, big, shiny corporation that's going to come to West Virginia and save us? So let's give them all of these tax breaks. Let's give them land because they're going to bring bright future hope to West Virginia. And maybe it's a bright shining star for a minute, but they never deliver that next level of economic growth. And that's because they're, you know, being given by politicians that have had campaign donations given to them by special interest groups. And I am the person who can hold Charleston accountable to not doing those types of things anymore, to just creating an even playing field for all of our businesses that are here, small, medium, and large, so we don't have to make those special backroom deals anymore that always fall through. Somebody who can just provide accountability to Charleston, someone who can end the corruption, someone who's not part of the political machine, someone who, when CPS drops the ball, when the state police drops the ball, when there's a horror story that happens in the Department of Health and Human Resources or the Department of Veterans Affairs, doesn't cover it up, but brings it out into the open, into the light, and says, hey, we're going to fire some people. This was a terrible tragedy that happened to our citizens. We're going to burn it down. We're not going to cover it up. We want the West Virginia people to know what happened. And I'm the only candidate that's going to do that. I'm the only candidate who actually cares about the people of West Virginia, as opposed to my party or political promises and campaign donations that have been made.
So how hard is it to fire government employees in West Virginia?
Well, it's actually not really hard. And that's that's an interesting thing. It's not hard at all. You could come into that system and clean house. There's something called the West Virginia Public Employee Grievance Board. I mean, they could file grievances, but it's not difficult. That's kind of my specialty, so I don't want to get too esoteric on you as an employment lawyer.
For it.
But it wouldn't be.
That's always the excuse given is we can't get rid of, you know, government employees. We can't get rid of bad teachers because of the teachers unions. And my mother-in-law is a teacher, and she's actually seen a lot of that. You know, they just move them around within the system if there's a problem. But yeah, that is one of the big problems of holding government employees accountable, is, you know, what I've witnessed.
Well, it's not difficult, to the extent that they are giving you that excuse. All that has to happen to change that is changing the law. So all that involves is getting the legislature on board and changing the law. But that is an excuse that is fed to people a lot. That is an unwillingness to take on the, you know, to go through the grievance process and, you know, to put bad teachers through the union. And I mean, there are through the union process, the grievance process, teachers are an interesting example, so we can use that example. There are good teachers and there are bad teachers.
Sure,
just like there are good police officers, bad police officers, good CPS workers, bad CPS workers. My experience are the good ones want the bad ones held accountable because they don't like getting a bad name because of the others. You could either, I suppose, if you wanted to, you know, revamp the entire process altogether, all it would take is a redoing of the process, because the grievance process we're talking about is an administrative process. So you could rewrite the administrative process, and that could be done with, you know, a rewriting of a little bit of state code that wouldn't take much work at all. But if you're working within the existing framework of the code, all it would take is an attorney general's office that was willing to, you know, pursue the grievances, because that's what happens. If you say as a state entity that you're going to fire someone and that person challenges it, then it's normally the attorney general's office who's representing the state of West Virginia on the other side, defending the state of West Virginia at the different employee grievance levels. But you're allowed to terminate state employees as long as there's just cause. And if you look at the state employee grievance wins and loss rates, it's not hard to terminate the employees as long as you're documenting it and as long as you have cause. And when you have bad actors in the state government, they should be able to be terminated just like any other business, any other entity. So I think it's an excuse that people use a lot. There's certainly different layers of the grievance system. And, you know, I will tell you, in my private career, I've represented some state workers in the public employee grievance system. And I've actually alleged sometimes that they have in a court, I mean, you could probably find a record of me saying it sometimes, that the way that the laws are written sometimes by the state, that sometimes they have a little bit less due process than, an average worker, because the rights that in terms of the different types of lawsuits and things that they can file are a little bit more limited than a private worker. And the time frames that they have, again, that's getting a little bit esoteric, but I'm telling you that so you understand that it is an excuse that is used by the government to not clean house the way they need to. When they say to you, oh, well, it's the unions and it's so hard to terminate government employees, it's an excuse. It's not real. I tell you that as an employment lawyer and as an expert in that area of law. Excuse.
Well, I have experience in a private sector union job, and whenever they try to get rid of a worthless employee, the union would fight for that worthless employee, but it was usually a supervisor that didn't do paperwork correctly that allowed that employee to get their job back. So. You know, I've seen the prime example of what you're talking about, of the state not carrying through and doing the due process when you're firing someone for just cause. And unfortunately, we just have that in so many aspects and so many jobs of people just not doing things correctly and following procedure.
Right. Yeah. And I mean that. The problem with, you know, that whole administrative bureaucracy is exactly what you're talking about. If we design something that is so complicated that when someone forgets to file, you know, one piece of paperwork in triplicate, that it has to get reversed all the way back to the beginning, or some judge has to say, well, you know, you have to reinstate this person because you made this error, then yeah, it's going to be difficult. But it doesn't have to be that way. Those things could be cleaned up. And, you know, that's part of bureaucracy, right? I mean, it's part of one of the reasons that I want to run is because there's a state code and a state code of regulations. State regulations, by the way, aren't even laws. They're regulations, which are something completely different. They're passed by the administrative state. They don't even go through people who are elected. They're passed by bureaucrats that are appointed to office, which is a whole nother, we could probably talk for 2 hours on that. But those types of things make it so complicated to get anything done. But we should just light that book on fire. You know, the Code of State Regulations, like we don't need that type of, you know, regulatory body. And it's that type of, you know, procedure and nuance that makes it difficult to get things done.
Yeah.
But the law doesn't make it difficult. Just regulatory authority makes it difficult.
Eric, as we're starting to wind down here a little bit, I have some, I guess, some selfish issues that I want to ask you about. Some, obviously I care about different issues, but there's some sitting here thinking there's probably three that are fairly close to my heart, and I wanted to get your stance on them. And I'll just give you all three up top and then let you respond. Give me your thoughts on abortion, gun rights, and school choice.
Okay. Abortion. So for me, I don't like talking about abortion in a pro-choice, pro-life bucket in terms of labeling people, and here's why. I think that if you're pro-life, the goal is to save the lives of children. I don't believe that pro-life laws save the lives of children. What we know about what's happened in West Virginia since the Dobbs decision from the United States Supreme Court is this, that more West Virginia women are having abortions than they did pre-Dobbs. That's, you know, statistically proven.
I just read about this the other day.
They're just going out of state to do it. And, you know, as a libertarian, what I believe is that prohibition doesn't work in any way, shape, or form. So when the government tells women that they can't get an abortion, it doesn't save the lives of children that pro-life identified folks are trying to save. It just means that they're going to go get it a different way. And what's difficult is that if I wanted to start a private adoption agency, or if I wanted to start a nonprofit to help what I viewed the situation as, which is, you know, an increase in the death of children, if I viewed abortion that way, I couldn't do that because the government would say to me, well, you've got to have a license to be an adoption agency.
Right.
They would say to me, well, you can't just, start taking in, you know, drug addicted women. You've got to have a license to run a rehab center. They would start licensing me to death and telling me that I couldn't take private action as an individual to help save the lives of these children. So to that end, I suppose you could say to you, you know, if you asked me to put myself in a bucket, I would probably say, well, you know, you would have to put me in a pro-choice bucket because I don't think that pro-life laws work.
You're going back kind of to the what we talked about earlier, where it's the private sector job, like with the churches feeding homeless people and taking care of that. You're saying that that's where the solution's at, not in government. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
If we move on to the second issue, which is gun rights, I don't believe in any restrictions whatsoever on the Second Amendment.
Oh man, I take
some heat.
Music to my ears.
I take some heat for that sometimes. If you are not a safe enough person to own a gun, then that means you have committed a heinous crime and you should be in jail. The government and other folks should not be in the business of guessing whether or not you're going to commit a crime, predicting whether or not you're going to commit a crime. If you want to commit a mass murder, if you are, you know, an individual who suffers from some sort of issues, you're going to find a way to commit a mass murder. And, you know, although some people think, you know, it's a little bit ludicrous, I think it would be, you know, very irresponsible of us to forget that the reason that the Second Amendment came to exist was because we were a country that was born out of revolution.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that we could ever feel so safe as to forget that, you know, to forget that fact. And, you know, regardless of how you do or you do not feel about COVID, you know, it was only 4 years ago that the government decided that we were all going to get locked in our houses for a while.
Yes, absolutely. People forget that so quick.
And although I get that hindsight is 20/20, and I will get that, you know, I mean, I will admit that at the time, we only knew what we knew, and people were scared. I get that. It goes to show you that we should all be skeptical about who is in power, when they are in power, and how that could affect us. So I don't believe in any restrictions on the Second Amendment. And so you said abortion, gun rights. What was the last one?
The school choice. I just saw you had that list on your website as well. I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Oh yeah, I am a fierce advocate of school choice. I think that everybody should have the right to educate their children how, when, and where they want, and by whom. I do believe in terms of public education, sometimes I think that, you know, public school teachers get a little bit of a bad rap, because I think one of the things that we forget about public school teachers is that they are one of the only professions that go to school, get a degree, and then have, you know, the state of West Virginia come in and literally give them scripts sometimes on how they have to teach.
Sure.
So, you know, I've talked to a lot of public school teachers that are highly irritated by that. So I happen to believe that one of the problems with public education is the State Department of Education. So, you know, I have some sympathy for the public school system. With that being said, it's a mess. And even if it wasn't a mess, even if we had the best public school education system in the country, if, you know, my neighbor next door or your neighbor says, I don't like the government school and I want to send my child to some other school, and or, you know, I want to homeschool my child, I think that that's everybody's absolute right.
I love it.
If you would have talked to me 6 months ago, I would have told you I thought that the Hope Scholarship should have been expanded to all students in West Virginia, not just students who had been to public school. I think we're on the right track with that. I don't think that charter schools should be limited in West Virginia the way they are. I don't think that Hope Scholarship recipients should be governed by, you know, state mandated curriculums the way they are. So I think that there's a lot that we could do in West Virginia to open up school choice. I think, I don't know how much you all followed the story about the young girl.
Yes.
Okay. So there was, you know, the story about the young girl who died very tragically. And of course, Charleston used it as a way to come and attack school choice and say, well, really, if this child hadn't been homeschooled, or if this local board of education was following up on her more, you know, perhaps her death would have been prevented, when the real fact is the state of West Virginia had more than enough opportunity to prevent that child's death. The police went over and checked on her, CPS went over and checked on her. And what they really want to do is say, well, the state failed via CPS and they failed via the state police, so we want to restrict the rights of West Virginians just a little bit more by, you know, restricting homeschool rights, so that we can have another chance to fail that young girl.
I've seen a lot of calls for that. You're exactly right. I think I remember reading one of Hoppy's commentaries, and it seemed like he was kind of leaning that way. That's kind of the way it's been spun, is it's time to crack down on the homeschoolers and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and that's just really not fair.
Loudoun, Virginia, and every inner city school in America, and plenty of other examples, prove that kids are not safe in the government schools.
Sure.
So they're going to find one example to crack down on that. So, Erica, I got a question. What percent of West Virginians that are in prison are for nonviolent crimes, or some sort of major fraud? What percent are locked up for stuff that they probably shouldn't be locked up for?
That's an interesting question. What I can tell you is that, and I don't have my statistics. I don't have my drug statistics in front of me, but the last time I ran it, I believe that 75, don't quote me on this, because I don't have the statistics in front of me. Normally, sure, when I know I'm going to talk about drugs, I have my statistics, but I believe that 75% of the inmates in West Virginia are being incarcerated for nonviolent drug offense.
Holy cow.
And, you know, I gave that statistic one time and somebody challenged me on it and they said, no, that's, you know, that is for, that might be for, I think they said, well, that would just be for, that might include drug dealers. And I'm like, well, it does, because drug dealing is technically, unless, you know, as long as somebody didn't get killed during the drug deal, is technically a nonviolent drug offense. It was a consensual I mean, you know, regardless of how you feel about drugs,
right,
it was a consensual business transaction. And I'm pretty sure that it was, that it's 75%.
And let's be honest, it's all about tax. You know, the government has no problem with the sale of any drugs as long as they can collect tax. I live on the border, well, almost on the border of Texas and New Mexico. I go into New Mexico every day. New Mexico recently legalized weed. There's now 15 weed stores on every block. I have no idea how they do enough business for all of them to be in business, but it's fine now that the government's figured out how to tax it. That's, you know, that's the whole reason prohibition of alcohol. What a joke that was.
Yep.
And it all came down to the revenuers. It was all about collecting your taxes. How dare you produce something and sell it to your neighbor? You know, I mean, it's essentially an agricultural transaction. You take your corn and your ingredients and make you some alcohol and you know, yeah, you're allowed to sell eggs. Well, you're not allowed to sell raw milk, but you're allowed to sell eggs and other products, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, how do you plan on bringing good jobs to West Virginia? And also tied into that, how do you bring agriculture back into a focus? Because my experience in West Virginia was they really care about timber and the forest and that management, but they have given up on agricultural production of any kind. You know, they're fine with people having a hobby farm and maybe producing a little food for themselves, but they've largely abandoned any hope for being a production agriculture state.
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to take a look. It goes back to when we were talking about that, you know, that regulatory framework and the regulatory state. You really have to start to dig into those laws and get rid of those. I mean, that's what's happening. You know, if you look at what happened when they legalized hemp and medical marijuana, they only issued so many licenses. And, you know, that happens so often. If you start to get rid of the restrictions, I mean, that raw milk was a big thing, right? When you're talking about agriculture, why should it matter if I want to go to my neighbor's farm and I want to buy raw milk? Why does that matter? And I think if you start to really dig into, there's so many of those types of restrictions, not just, I mean, I know you asked specifically about agriculture, but in all types of different economic areas, but specifically regarding, you know, agriculture, if you start like eliminating the types of regulations they have, there are regulations in West Virginia that affect agriculture's ability to run local co-ops that we could eliminate that would allow small farms to get started. A lot of large farming is difficult. You know, those can normally only exist on subsidies at like a huge level. So most of your small local farming is going to get started in West Virginia, going to co-ops, going to farmers markets, local selling. And those things are hard to do because they do have some laws, and I'm certainly not an expert in that area, but there are a lot of different regulations and laws that restrict the ability of, you know, if you got person A who has some chicken eggs and you've got person B who has some squash and they want to get together and have a co-op, there's certain regulations right now that stop them from doing that. So if you started to eliminate those types of things, small farms would start to grow, which would then allow them to start to sell more, produce more, grow more, go to bigger farmers markets. And then overall, in terms of economic development, I think it goes back to what we talked about. You have to start to create an even playing field. For me, it's about creating an economic climate in West Virginia that makes people want to come here as opposed to having to offer people special favors to come here. That, it, you know, and that is eliminating the inventory, the business inventory tax, eliminating taxes that make it unattractive for businesses to want to locate to West Virginia. I mean, you shouldn't have a business who looks at West Virginia and says, I need tax breaks A, B, and C to want to come to West Virginia. And that's where we are, because we're located next door to states that have a more attractive business tax structure. So we just need to flatline, create tax structures from the get-go that we don't have to modify to get businesses into the state. And we have to get rid of regulations that are silly, that make it difficult for businesses to operate. I don't know if you fellas know what certificates of need are, but they're the most ridiculous business regulation that you've ever heard of. In West Virginia, you need a certificate of need to open up a trash company. What I mean is you have to go to the state of West Virginia and you have to say, please grant me permission to haul trash. That,
please, master,
that
may
means
I?
Everything from if Grandpa Joe wants to get his pickup truck and haul trash on the weekends, he has to get permission from the state of West Virginia, up to and including if a large corporate trash company that wants to be a competitor to Waste Management wants to open up, you know, a large industrial trash service in West Virginia, they have to ask the state of West Virginia.
Holy cow, and, that's ridiculous.
Yes, sir. And if Waste Management has donated to the political campaigns of the current folks who run the state of West Virginia, do you think that's ever going to happen?
Of course not.
And there, I could, forever, I could talk to you about these types of regulations. So when people talk to me about, like, what are you going to do for economic development, I'm just going to eliminate those things. Do you know that in West Virginia, in order to run any type of place that sells that sells retail, like beer and wine, the state of West Virginia tells you where you have to purchase your beer and wine, from what wholesaler?
Oh, my gosh.
So if you run a convenience store and you want to sell beer and wine, you can't get it from the place that's cheaper. You have to buy it from what wholesaler the state of West Virginia tells you to. So we do so many things to handcuff, you know, businesses in West Virginia from being able to economically, you know, operate successfully. That, I mean, businesses don't want to locate here. When they look at the type of regulation and not regulations that keep people safe, right? Not, you know, we don't want a mine to explode, just silly bureaucracy.
Yep.
We just need to eliminate those things, and people would say, oh, look, West Virginia really is open for business.
Let the free market work. It'll take off. It's just, and
absolutely,
those are the issues that the upper echelon, it doesn't even affect them. It doesn't bother them. It doesn't cross their mind. But it's a big deal to the small business owner.
Absolutely.
And it just, those things, like, how did that law ever get into existence? That should have been thrown out in the Supreme Court based on a monopoly. Like, I have to go purchase from this distributor. I mean, in my business, I'm in. I go find the person to give me the best product for the best price.
Yeah, that's the way it should be across the board. Yeah.
Right. That's capitalism. But we don't have capitalism. We have crony capitalism. And it's all so weighted for whoever's, you know, has the current favor of the current people in power. And it just is that when you start digging into it, the swamp is deep and it's murky. And the swamp exists in West Virginia, obviously. It's not so wild and free.
Yeah, apparently when you get to Charleston, it's not. Erica, I don't want to take too much of your time. I greatly appreciate you talking to us. I want to tell you this. I've never voted for Libertarian in my life, and you might be my first. Just want to throw that out there.
So. Well, thank you. I appreciate that very, very much.
My last question for you, election night, like what do we do? Are we sitting on the couch being nervous? You having a watch party? Like, what are you doing on election night?
You know, it's funny you ask that. We just had a meeting with my campaign team, and my campaign manager said, what are we doing on election night? You know, normally I like to surround myself with the people who have helped me get here. So it's You know, even though I'm a libertarian third party candidate, it takes an army. I have a lot of volunteers, a lot of people spending time scheduling my events, fundraising, you know, walking those streets with me, making calls. So I think that I will probably be sitting somewhere in West Virginia, probably in a local brewery with those folks, you know, glued to the TV and glued to our phone, watching those results come in.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.